We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Let's go there.
With Shira and Ryan.
Oh my God. Entertainment.
Music. Pop culture.
LGBT plus news. Oh. Let's go there. Starts now.
Hello and happy Thursday. Hi. We made it through this short week. Almost. And I'm Shira.
And I am a person that has given up.
Your name is Ryan, otherwise known as Ryan. Come on, don't give up yet.
I am tired. This week has been so long and I'm over.
Once again, a vacation deserves another vacation.
It's just not even just a vacation. It's just like,
a life vacation.
Yeah, just a life vacation.
Like, just can we hit pause for a second?
You know, that movie with Adam Sandler with the remote, I really feel like that should be a real thing. Even though he took advantage of it, had some life lessons, to learn. But I don't think I would take advantage of it. I would use it at the most appropriate times and needed times, you know? No personal gain there.
Yeah, so speaking of just being vulnerable at where we're at in our lives.
Yeah. We weren't doing that already.
We are, but it's also important to note that it is National Suicide Prevention Week coming up. And actually, here at Channel Q and here at radio.com, we're really doing a lot around mental health. On Sunday, September 8th at 7 a.m., we're going to be all working together to help end the stigma of talking about mental health, even though here on the show, we do that a lot, by the way.
No, but I feel like you've probably been seeing in the press a lot of amazing, you know, sound bites from Halsey or Tegan and Sarah where they've been talking about mental health. Well, it's all a part of the I'm Listening. .org thing that we are teaming up with them, and they're going to be doing this amazing kind of in-depth conversation.
Yeah, they're doing this in-depth conversation on mental health, suicide prevention, and it's going to be, as you mentioned, Halsey, Lizzo, Shawn Mendes, Tegan and Sarah, Blink-182, joined by our very own Dr. Chris Donahue from Loveline, and you could actually be featured on the show and share your story on imlistening.org. That's imlistening.org to share your story. And we all have a story.
Yeah, and to be clear, Dr. Chris is going to be doing a show with our AMP sister, Yessie Ortiz. They're airing their own kind of mental health awareness special programming, and it's going to be all over Southern California. So it's going to be kind of a separate situation happening. So all of the stars are going to be involved, and then Dr. Chris and Yessie are going to be doing their own amazing kind of programming, really bringing light and taking calls and just really having a safe space of mental health conversation, which is beautiful.
Yeah, and the reason, obviously, this is important for all of us, but specifically here at Channel Q, it's important to talk about mental health at any point in suicide prevention intervention, because we all know this, that LGBTQ youth are 60% more likely to struggle with sadness, ideas of suicide and taking their own life, compared with 12% of non-LGBTQ youth. Transgender youth are 4 times more likely to struggle with depression than their non-trans peers. And LGBTQ plus adults are actually more likely than others to struggle with mental health too and substance abuse. So it's important to come together as a community to really be there for each other. So again, I'm Listening. That show and that conversation is happening this Sunday at 7 a.m. right here on Channel Q.
All right, let's get into the show. Top of the hour news.
What's trending in the news right now? Top of the hour. We've got more updates on Hurricane Dorian. It's moved down to a Category 2, a storm moving through the Atlantic Ocean, about 55 miles south of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And tonight, basically, the center of the storm will move closer to the coast of South Carolina and toward the coast of North Carolina tonight and Friday. Now, tomorrow, it's going to be moving to the southeast and of extreme southeastern New England Friday night and Saturday morning and approach Nova Scotia later on Saturday. So this is still happening. It's really crazy. And again, we'll be bringing you all the updates right here on Channel Q. But just stay safe and stay updated with all the news. Is our talk station, our sister station,
KNX
also probably covering it. So KNX,
for sure, they're covering
definitely keep up to date right there. And do you know anyone who's dealing with the storm at all?
No.
I know. I know. Isn't it interesting? I know a lot of people in Florida.
It's not interesting. I don't know anybody in Florida.
I know. Well, I have a lot of people in Miami.
I mean, I'm just, we have amazing family, our listeners out there in Florida, so we do know people. but for the most part, no, I don't know personally anyone.
Have you ever been in a hurricane?
No, I have not. Is this the meteorologist segment?
Yes. The weather reports with Cheryl Lazar.
It's like, no.
I grew up in Montreal, so
I've been in tornadoes. That's
tornadoes?
Yeah, tornadoes. That's very common in Middle Tennessee. So that's because it's all like flat land, so tornadoes are bound to happen. So I've been in terrible tornadoes.
Yeah, well, we're going to be getting into the climate crisis coming up in just a moment. And this is actually all connected, right? What's happening in terms of weather changes, hurricane season, tornadoes even, and what we're seeing in the rainforest. It's all more connected than we think. And actually, in New York right now, there was yesterday the CNN climate crisis town hall. It's leading up to, I think this month is really important because the UN climate summit is happening September 23rd. And so we're hearing a lot of conversation around this, and not just from, you know, our friends and the news, but specifically also from presidential candidates, because it's very much top of mind and it's going to be included in a lot of their policies moving forward. Now, from banning straws to energy saving light bulbs. Would you be down for energy saving light bulbs? We look at the plans our Democratic presidential hopefuls have for saving us from climate change.
Yes.
I know you hate the straws situation.
I hate the straw. Actually, oh my God, that reminds me, over the Labor Day weekend, I actually got you a metal straw that I forgot to bring you.
I need more of those. I need
okay,
a cover.
Okay, I only have one. And it's very cute. It's gold. It's all gold. See? And it's like aesthetically
It's
pleasing.
Like an accessory. That's what I love about it. Although, to be honest, I need a cover for it because I'm throwing them in my bag and then it's dirty. You won't want to use a dirty straw.
It's a metal straw. Just wash it.
Well, what do you do if you're just like, you have it and you're at the cafe? You're not going to, who's going to wash it for you?
I don't know. I feel like
these are real life first world issues.
You're right.
First world problems. Anyway, so at this CNN climate crisis town hall, a lot of the Democratic hopefuls responded to the anchors and hosts, but they also responded to teen activists who were there. And it was interesting to see their responses. And so we're going to be getting to that right after this on What's Trending in the News.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
So our 10 Democratic presidential candidates were featured in this special CNN climate crisis town hall in New York yesterday, which is pretty crazy. Like 7 hours they were talking about this, which is amazing. I'm really happy they brought them together for this conversation. They discussed their plans around sustainability, the future, zero emissions by mid-century.
I mean, the interesting thing about this presidential kind of race,
You
are seeing, you know, more and more topics kind of being segmented, and they're doing these separate forums on separate issues. So like you have this climate change one, then, you know, the LGBTQ one is coming up very, very soon. And so it's very interesting kind of how they are really, you know, bringing these topics that a lot of people have at the top of their minds, especially young people, because young people need to be encouraged to vote.
Yeah, because this new generation is coming in full force.
And when I say young, I mean like people like me.
Yeah, of course. there's a whole new age group coming in, and definitely they want to make sure they're getting their vote. Now, one moment that really stood out from this CNN climate crisis town hall was this question from a 19-year-old teen activist who asked this to Joe Biden.
Older generations have continued to fail our generation by repeatedly choosing money and power over our lives and our futures. So how can we trust you to put us, the future, but over the wants of large corporations and wealthy individuals?
Because I've never done it. I've never made that choice my whole career. Simple.
Okay, simple and sweet answer from Joe Biden.
Joe Biden had a lot of different things going on during that forum that I wish we had time to talk about, but I'm super excited to bring our guest on. So.
Yeah, we have Claire Bresnahan English, who's actually the first woman chief executive at New Leaders Council, the nation's largest training organization for progressive young professionals. They're doing a lot also around climate change and bringing together this next generation around the climate crisis. So welcome to the show.
Hi, y'all.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Loud and clear. So what was your takeaway from this town hall and also, you know, these incredible young activists coming together to, you know, ask questions from these candidates?
Right. Well, as the first woman to run this incredible organization that's focused on training millennials in 50 chapters across the country, and the thing I took away was the power of how much millennials' voices are informing our national dialogue. Think about how 4-8 years ago, we weren't having these longer town halls on policy issues that are at the core of what the millennial experience is.
Right.
That's going to very much affect our lives going forward, right? So I think it was just powerful to see, as someone who is of the millennial generation, who knows how these issues are going to impact my life, impact our members' lives, it was incredible to see how millennials are driving the policy conversations now.
Well, yeah, and I think that's even one thing. That's kind of what you work in. The New Leaders Council is, you know, the nation's largest training organization for progressive young professionals, and you guys are kind of leading the way in kind of growing these next generation of climate change leaders. How are you motivating, you know, these kind of new leaders, especially them being younger, to really care about, you know, our you know, communities and our world when it comes to climate change?
I think it's all about, for NLC, our leaders are already motivated. They're on the ground. Incredible stories of how they're impacting it, right? Our Florida chapters right now are feeling the effect of Hurricane Dorian.
Right.
We have California chapters affected by the fires. We've had folks who were out there on the ground when Hurricane Harvey hit Houston, you know, a few years ago, where they were the ones in the convention hall using the NLC network to get folks the things they needed. And I think this is impacting their daily lives. So we're here at NLC to give them the training to be able to go out and be activists and change makers and leaders in their local communities and get to a place where we're not just reacting to this issue, but we're getting out ahead of it and actually being leaders on an issue that is clearly going to impact the future of our country, the future of our world. The motivation is there, and we're giving them this incredible community and connections to be able to leverage the power of millennials' voices.
And I feel like we're seeing, like, from a 16-year-old like Greta Thunberg out of Europe, she's doing incredible things. I feel like
I call her the row, row, row your boat girl. She's over there sailing. Yeah. She's doing her thing.
I just think it makes me feel very inspired about the next generation. It's not just the selfie generation. But do you feel, not like you represent an entire generation of millennials, do you feel like you guys are satisfied with what you're hearing from the candidates?
Ooh, it's a great question. I know that for our membership, you know, it's millennials, you're right. They're not just one monolithic voting block, but we do have incredible power. We're going to be soon the hugest, most big voting bloc in our country, right, with almost 83 million voters. And we've heard consistently from our alums that it's of the most important policy issues of our time, one third have said climate change is it. And we've consistently heard, too, that right now is not enough. What we're doing in policy, what we're doing across the board in our society is not enough. I know our Black Caucus got together after Harvey and had a conversation on how does climate change even disproportionately affect Black and brown communities and communities of underrepresented across society? And so there's just this piece of where absolutely there needs to be more piece of where we're getting out in front of them. We're having proactive change and not just waiting for these disasters to happen to us.
Yeah. And I agree with that. And I also think, you know, you say you guys, NLC, already work with young professionals that are kind of already motivated. But a lot of time this, you know, climate change, and speaking from my perspective, climate change is really can be very highbrow when you're thinking about everything. And it can be hard for people that are kind of just like, you know, everyday kind of people. They're like, how do I get involved with this? What should I be caring about? Like, what are you doing to keep those people outside of this conversation motivated to join the conversation?
Oh, that's a great point. I think that's what the beauty of the community of NLC is, that we have this ripple effect where we're training them to be able to reach more and more. So for example, there's things that we're doing internally to walk the walk, right? So there's everything from, we had members who really pushed for, let's stop using plastic bottles. Let's move from a zero print impact. Yeah. Where now when we have any of our national events, like at our national convention, we didn't do paper handouts. Those little things to be able to help remind the folks where we know the millennial generation is focused on a lot of issues. And so even if climate change isn't the one that's front and center for you, there are still things for you to be able to get engaged with and start to make those baby steps along the way. And then to be able to bring that maybe back to your place of work.
Yeah.
To your places of worship, right? Like, there's a true ripple effect of what are those first steps you can take. And we even start implementing that with our own policies and practices as an organization.
That's amazing. Yeah, I'm telling you, we're going to be privatizing this. We expect the government to jump on board and these candidates and our policymakers. But if they're not going to do it, I think everyone else is going to do it individually and through their communities.
Has NLC jumped behind any of the candidates so far?
Oh, that's another good question. So We had our first ever millennial forum that's never been hosted for candidates back in July in Des Moines, where we have our annual convention. And so it was an incredible opportunity where our own members were asking the presidential candidates questions on climate change and student loans and gun policy. And it was a piece of where, you know, again, our generation, our membership, our NLC membership is coming from a lot of different angles of what progressivism means. So for us, it's about making sure our members have a platform to hold the presidential candidates accountable for the issues most important to our generation.
Yeah, good for you.
Yes, I love that. NLC, shout out.
Oh, well, it was amazing.
Sign me up.
Claire, thank you so much for joining us today. And you're always welcome back to share what you guys are up to. Because once again, yes, you're the biggest group coming up voting. So we definitely want to hear from you.
That's right. And we have recruitment going on. So if anyone is interested in getting involved, we have all across our 50 chapters. If you're interested in getting involved, we have the biggest application session for our programs happening right now this month.
Okay. At the NLC, NLC.org.
At the NLC, newleaderscouncil.org.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thanks, ladies. Bye.
Thank you.
She called me a lady.
You're a queen.
I mean, I am a queen.
All right, we're moving on from what's trending in the news to top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea?
Okay, so coming up in 5 minutes, find out which Drag Race queen is accusing Ariana Grande for stealing looks from queer artists. That is coming up because I'm spilling the tea.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Honey, we are back with What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. Now, let me tell you this.
Wow.
So there is a drag queen who, one, is she's from RuPaul's Drag Race. She wasn't that great of a queen, in my opinion. But, you know, her name is Farrah Moan. She has accused Ariana Grande of basically copying one of her looks and stealing from other queer artists. Ooh. Now, this is a huge claim. Like, it is not okay.
Wait, so Ariana Grande just told Forever 21 that they copied her, but then someone else saying that she...
And that's exactly it, because this is the shady little tweet that Farrah Moan sent out. She took to Twitter, and she claimed that Grande's team literally sent a picture of her to the designer and paid them to copy her look from All Stars 4. Now, she also added that she finally met the designer and got told all of this tea, and she said, I guess stealing from queer artists for profit is fine. Though she said, I don't fault the designer because the designer is hired. She hired was a local queen and was paid a ton of money to do it, and money they couldn't turn down. And then she continued on to say, and then was honest with me about it. So no, I don't fault the queen that made it at all. Ariana has coin, and she, you know, even Farrah was like, well, I need to be getting a piece of that $10 million since she not only is, you know, claiming that February 21, you know, copied her look, well, she copied my look. Well, honey, people were upset. Of course, like all the comments, everybody, the Ariana Grande's fans came and just dragged Farrah. Basically, you know, Farrah said that her outfit was this corset diamond moment, and it has like little diamond fringe on the bottom. And if you remember from the Seven Things Seven Things. Is that Mary Poppins? No, that's
seven
not Mary
Things
Poppins.
Is like the
Sound of Music. These are
know.
A few of my
it's
no,
like the
anyway.
Copy if someone's gonna do like it's like the cheap version. Instead of rings, it's like I have a bunch of things.
Well, in that video Seven Rings, you could see there's a side-by-side picture where you see Farrah's costume and you see Ariana's costume. Well, a lot of people were like, well, guess what, Ariana has worn a similar costume on her tour on a performance on the VMAs way before anyone ever knew who Farrah Moan was. And so this was an interesting conversation because, you know, Grande, of course, isn't going to respond to any of these claims. Like, she's going to pay this whole thing with dust. But the drag star responded. She said, you can attack me all day, but it's not going to change anything at the end of the day. They did what they did. I don't care about suing anyone. Just needed to put this out there. Now, do we think this was appropriate for, you know, this drag queen, who has a huge following, by the way, she's from Drag Race, mm-hmm. to go out there and say this?
I mean, yeah, if it's real, then why not?
But here's the thing. What's the line of being like, because I've worked in fashion and I've tons of people always, they say, hey, mood board. They create looks.
I know. Everything's inspired by something.
Yeah. So my thing is, and also if there's receipts of similar outfits that was possibly recreated from an Ariana thing back in 2014, can we really claim anything?
I mean, I think that at a certain point you could like call it out.
And once you take that as a compliment.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. At that point, I mean, what you're not going to get money. You're not going to sue. Why don't you just, you know, call it out. Say it's so nice that she was inspired by my look. Wink, wink. You know?
Oh, yeah. And I think they even
pulled up. You could throw a bit of shade, but what's the point of really stirring the pot?
My thing is they even pulled up, the fans pulled up tweets of Farrah, you know, saying in the past she was, especially about this outfit, was saying that she was so excited that Ariana Grande even did it. And so my thing is it's wild that all of a sudden you're coming in and you're trying to drag. Either way, I don't know. Let us know what you think. Add us on social at We Are Channel Q because we got so much more coming up in What's the Tea in 7 minutes. We're going to have a conversation about perception because people's perceptions of themselves can be really skewed. Yep. And this is what happened to Harry Styles. So find out what he thinks about himself coming up in 7 minutes.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
We're back with What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. Now, let's talk about perception, Shira. Yeah. Because I feel like we've had this personal conversation about like how I remember I had bumped into an old friend from high school and we had this conversation and he had briefly mentioned like how he thought I had thought I was like a sidekick to a really long, you know, friend of mine. And he was like, no, actually, you were kind of like this big personality. I would have never thought of myself like that. And so it's interesting how you have your own perception of yourself. And when other people see you completely differently. And you've even said that, you know, multiple times. And so it's interesting because Harry Styles, as it turns out, when he looks in the mirror, he is not necessarily seeing this heartthrob that everyone else is seeing. He, you know, was talking in a magazine. It's this Face magazine. He said the word sexy sounds so strange coming out of his mouth. Now, he's 25 and he was saying, you know, I would say that that's probably why I never consider myself sexy. And I thought that was such an interesting sentence that, you know, a statement that he said, because I feel like it might, do you think it's hard for people to find themselves sexy at times?
Totally. I also think we have this, not stigma, I don't know if that's the right word, but we think that if we think we're hot or sexy, we're a narcissist or we're too confident.
Yeah.
And I actually think there's a way to think you're awesome without it being looked at in that way. And I think we should all strive to look at ourselves in the mirror and be like, yeah, you're hot, you're sexy, you deserve it, you work it.
Here's the thing for me, because I do consider myself a big personality, I have always found it difficult for myself because I think when people automatically perceive you in a certain way, I find it to be difficult for me to take compliments because I don't want to fuel this narrative of like, oh, he's the one with the big head, he's cocky and all these things. And I, you know, I think that's something for jokes and for fun, but do I necessarily feel that? Like, you know, I also feel uncomfortable when talking about when I get compliments from either guys or something where they're talking about how attractive, if I'm attractive or, you know, all these things. It's hard. You know, taking a compliment can be a very difficult thing.
Totally. And I do think it comes down to knowing your worth and your value and like really like believing in yourself and loving yourself.
Yeah.
Not to get all cheesy and all that, but like I used to be that person. And I think a lot of women get told this by guys, at least like when they're dating, a lot of guys I've been with or I'm friends with will say every time I give a woman a compliment, it's like, stop it.
Yeah.
No. Like, and they'll tell me, like, just receive it. And I feel like finally I'm in a place where someone gives me a compliment and I say, thank you. Not like I know, but yeah, I'm receiving that. I deserve to get that compliment.
See, I'm in that place now, but I also am like, when I even say thank you, I'm like, oh, thanks. Yeah, like it's just still kind of like there's a pause to it. It's just so hard. It's difficult.
It is. It's a process to get there.
Well, he does, you know, Harry Styles does actually see himself as the style trailblazer, though, kind of defying gender norms. He said, what's feminine and what's masculine, what men are wearing and what women are wearing, he said, it's like there's no lines anymore. And of course, you know, he actually took to the Met Gala back in May when he, you know, walked the pink carpet in this daring sheer like Gucci blouse. It was very ruffles and lace, and it's just not something that you would see a quote unquote heartthrob in Hollywood, the straight male. If, I don't know what his sexuality is.
Although Timothée Chalamet is really doing it up these days.
I mean, he's always been kind of a little bit of a style icon in some ways. But you know, Harry continues to talk about kind of the same attitude, like this, that same kind of attitude towards life in general, where he never wants to draw a line that excludes any of his fans. He says, while on the topic of sexuality, I'm not always super outspoken about it, but I think it's very clear from choices that I make that I feel a certain way about a lot of things. I don't know how to describe it. I guess I'm not. I want everyone to feel welcome at shows and online. They want to be loved and equal, you know? I'm never unsupported, so it feels weird for me to overthink it for someone else.
Andrew Harry Styles.
So he actually had a very, very good interview. And if you want to check out actually more of his topics that he was kind of touching on and some more of his statements, head over to our website at wearechannelq.com and make sure to keep us favorited on that radio.com.
You know, Harry, you might not think you're sexy, but that conversation's sexy. You know what I'm saying? It gets juicy.
Get out. Get out.
Now, coming up, what drag star is running for New York City Council? That is coming up on What's Trending in the News, top of the hour.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
So everybody, listen up. So, you know, Channel Q, please join us because on Sunday, September 8th, it is actually the start of National Suicide Prevention Week at 7 a.m. right on time. We will help end the stigma of talking about mental health. We'll be having an in-depth conversation on mental health and suicide prevention joined by, I mean, top of celebrities, Blink-182, Halsey, Lizzo, Shawn Mendes, Tegan and Sarah. And
pretty amazing group of people.
It's pretty great. Great. And our very own Dr. Chris will be doing his own version of his show with our Amp Radio sister, Yessie Ortiz. And they're going to be doing something throughout the SoCal, you know, Southern California. And it's going to be an awesome opportunity to be featured on the show. Please share your story on imlistening.org if you want to be involved in this mental health conversation, because we really need to break this stigma and create a safe space for people to feel heard and listened to. So yeah, imlistening.org to find out more and to also give us your story so we can feature you on September 8th.
Yeah, that's this Sunday, 7 a.m. It's happening right here and across the stations at radio.com. Looking forward to that. It's going to be a great event and program. Now let's get into what's trending in the news right now. Top of the hour. This is for our New York listeners and also our drag fans. We have a lot, obviously, everyone loves drag stars. Well, drag artist and activist Marty Gold Cummings announced he's running for New York City Council in the 2021 election. And if elected, he's going to be the first drag artist to be sworn into public office in the state of New York and the second in the country following the victory of LA-based drag queen Maybe A Girl. Do you know her? Is it Maybe? M-A-E-B-E? Do you know her?
No, I'm not familiar.
Oh. Well, she was elected to the Silver Lake Neighborhood Council in April. And over the last decade, Cummings has built a name for himself as a public servant and performance artist. He's the founder...
Like Maybe A Girl.
Oh, Maybe like, A. Oh, Maybe A Girl.
Maybe A Girl.
I was saying that wrong. Maybe A Girl. Is it a Canadian thing? A?
No, okay. it's drag queen names are.
I know.
Witty
I was getting to the wittiness, it just didn't happen.
No, I don't know if you would have known witty if it would have slapped you in the face.
Wow. Ouch, my heart. Okay, let's get back to Marty Gold Cummings. He's the founder of Hell's Kitchen Democrats. It's a community group that engages people in the area to organize and advocate for progressive issues. So according to Cummings' campaign website, the issues he plans on tackling with the New York City Council include affordable housing, NYPD relations, bike lanes, immigrant rights, bilingual access, high asthma areas, and violence against the LGBTQ community. So, yeah, you can check out his campaign website, MartyForManhattan.com, M-A-R-T-I. Let's move on to Boston, who we keep getting news coming out of Boston about their straight pride event that happened over the weekend, and specifically 36 protesters who were arrested this weekend, with 20 of them reportedly having been brought before a judge to be arraigned. Now, according to NBC Boston, Judge Richard Sinnott refused to diminish bail or dismiss the charges in almost every single case, even when it was the request of the prosecutors. I don't know why this guy is being so stringent about this, considering there were peaceful protesters protesting a straight Pride event. Like, they basically were like, oh, you are hating LGBTQ rights, and so we're going to protest that.
I mean, anything about the straight pride parade is, like, ridiculous.
But this is getting to be a very bad look because Boston's already come up against it, and now they're trying to prosecute the protesters. It's getting a bit messy.
But here's the thing. Boston should have never allowed it to happen. I get that they were trying to create this, you know, oh, well, you have to give someone their first, you know, amendment, blah, 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 freedom of speech. But this is like, now they're looking at the repercussions of, oh, wow, this is going to be something that people remember Boston by. And the whole thing to fuel a city is tourists. And you go, you're, now you're
and
literally...
schools. It's a big school town.
I mean, but now you're showing LGBTQ people, oh, guess what? I don't want to go to Boston because they allowed a straight pride parade.
Yeah.
So it's like all those, you know, small businesses and all those things are going to probably drop, you know, tremendously because people don't want to go there and enjoy their time in Boston anymore because of this crap.
Well, the district attorney, Rachel Rollins, said that this judge's insistence on arraigning individuals when her office has used its discretion to decline a case is an unconstitutional abuse of his power, serves neither interests of justice nor public safety for those people now tangled in the criminal justice system for exercising their right to free speech, basically protesting in peace, many of whom had no prior criminal record. I will use the legal process, she said, to remedy the judge's overstepping of his role. So, I mean, this is obviously something that isn't right. Judge Sinnott also had held a lawyer defending at least one of them in contempt of court for reading case law in support of her client. This is getting messy. We'll be definitely following this case as it continues. Now, coming up, a new Trump meme is upon us. We'll tell you all about Sharpie dun, dun, dun. Gates coming up right after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
So we all know that President Donald Trump, it's hard to take him seriously, and it's hard to feel like he's telling the truth a lot these days, or ever.
Well, Donald Trump loves a good fight with the media, and he will never let it go to waste.
Yeah, and he also will never admit when he either did the wrong thing, made a mistake, or that he's lying, and including in this latest
Such
example.
Beautiful qualities to
have. Yeah, really, what a leader.
Yeah.
So the latest one to come out of the administration and Donald Trump is this whole thing called Sharpie Gate. So, of course, with Hurricane Dorian moving across the U.S. From Florida through the South, you know, Trump basically claimed it was going to hit Alabama. And he had this map that he showed in the Oval Office. And it looked like the map was doctored to show that it was going to hit Alabama, but it looked like it was like a Sharpie marker. And so a lot of reporters, it caught the attention of these reporters and they mentioned it. And he's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. They're like, did you Sharpie the map to show that it was going to hit Alabama, even though weather forecasters and everything said that, you know, it basically wasn't, but he wouldn't let it down. So when he showed this map, he was like, no, the map actually shows that. And everyone was like, no, that's just the map that you guys created and you doctored. So Sharpie Gate was created. And it's just another prime example of not just Trump lying, but everyone around him covering up his lies.
Yeah, so today he actually insisted again that this was, you know, his warning that Alabama was going to be destroyed by Hurricane Dorian was accurate, even though the National Weather Service, they were like, no, it's not true. Like, stop saying it. So it's one of those things where, you know, he continued to do this. And even, you know, James Comey kind of got into this conversation. And, you know, that's one of Trump's, you know, really like enemy, like nemesis in some ways, where he wrote, Americans are in harm's way and the president is laser focused on covering up a small mistake he made. Narcissism is not leadership. America does better. And with that being said, you know, James Comey is right in some way. It's like Trump, you know, instead of being like, I was wrong, I didn't mean to say, you know, Alabama was going to get hit. Maybe I was off, and especially after the National Weather Service is saying that it's not true. Guess what? Let me turn my narcissism down and actually say, yeah, you guys are right. I'm wrong
the
for once.
The thing is, this didn't even need to be such
not
a
for
big
once,
deal.
But for several
yeah,
times.
But this didn't even need to be such a big deal. All he could have said, because it does keep moving, and, you know, we all thought it was going to hit certain places, and it's moving really quickly. And so it would have been easy for him to just say, oh, I thought it was going to hit that. It didn't. Thank you so much to the hard people working on this and covering what's happening at every moment as it's hitting our country and moving on. And instead, he continues to like focus in on why he's right, which it's distracting from the work he actually has to be doing. And social media users are ridiculing him and talking about this hashtag Sharpiegate. This is an interesting tweet from Mutter's Mommy. It's always interesting to see what people use for their social media names. He said, Sharpiegate is so petty and moronic, but it underlines a deeply disturbing and frankly terrifying propensity for the commander-in-chief of the U.S. to lie, then cover it without regard to the consequences of accountability, because no one holds him accountable. This is madness. And now on The Guardian, we're not going to go through this, we don't have that much time, but there was this really great article talking about, this is just obviously one instance of him doing this, and they talked about the other times that he's brought... he's done really bad things and lied, and basically everyone's covered it up for him.
I mean, I do want to touch on what Pete Buttigieg, obviously, you know, he's the Democratic presidential contender. He actually went on CNN because he was asked about it today, this morning, and he said this. He said he felt sorry for the president and that that is not the way that we should feel about the most powerful figure in this country. He said, this is humiliating. This is an embarrassing moment for our country. And I mean, well, tell that embarrassing moment to line up around the other embarrassing moments, because there's a long list of those moments. It's just like, it's going to continue while he's still in office. And it's sad, and it's also scary, because imagine, you know, if, you know, his followers are going to take his word at everything, and they're not going to listen to, you know, the actual National Weather Service if Donald Trump is saying, oh no, Alabama, you're about to get hit by this hurricane. There's a 95%, you know, chance that this is going to happen, instead of actually, you know, you never know if people are going to be like, all right, we got to get out of here, we got to leave town, all these things, and uprooting people's lives based off of a lie that you feel like you can just, you know, put out there and just put out fake facts.
Yeah, but it's also because it goes back to then
he is fake news.
Yeah, he's going to be like, well, yes,
ironic.
He's projecting.
It's very ironic.
He's the fake news. But instead of him admitting it, he's just like, I'll just say everyone else is fake news and no one will know who to believe. And so, yeah, it's really disturbing.
Yeah.
It's really scary. And so we're not going to go through, we should kind of maybe one day, maybe tomorrow, it's the last day of the week, go through all the other instances.
I'm not spending my Friday doing that shit. Now, if you want to do that in your own personal time, have at it, but not on my Good Friday.
Yeah, I'm going to have a glass of whiskey and read
a
all the other.
A glass of whiskey?
All the other moments.
Wow,
I'm becoming an
drunk.
Old white man. Okay, coming up, Scarlett Johansson is getting in deep trouble. What she had to say about Woody Allen's sexual abuse allegations, that is everyone counseling her. That's coming up right after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, so Scarlett Johansson has been canceled a lot lately. Of course, for taking on roles that should be played by members of the LGBTQ+ community. But now, more recently, in an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, she says that she believed that Woody Allen was innocent of these sexual abuse accusations that were brought up against him by his adoptive daughter, Dylan Farrow, and that she would work with him anytime. Now, this isn't the first time that he's been called out. You know, it's like his adoptive daughter coming out and speaking out against him is just, I guess reiterating what a lot of people knew, but now it's putting a face and voice behind it. Because obviously, we all know that Woody Allen isn't innocent of many things, right? I mean, he's been called out countless times.
He isn't innocent. Yeah.
But that was the latest in many accusations against him and many things that seem to be very obvious to a lot of people. And so this caused a lot of people to take notice and call Scarlett Johansson out, saying, you know, like, basically, how dare you speak up and support a man that has done horrible, wrong, and illegal things?
Okay, so let's backtrack a little bit. So Scarlett Johansson is not someone that holds her tongue. And we've seen this often. She's been called out, like you said, for playing roles. I mean, there was a movie that never ended up happening because she was going to be playing a trans man. And everyone was like, wait, what is this moment? And she talked about, you know, her kind of standing up in the Time's Up movement, where she wants to be a part of certain movements. But then she befriends, you know, Woody Allen, and has statements where she's saying, I believe him and I would work with him anytime. time. And so there's an issue there because, one, it seems like there is what is the word I'm looking for? There is, one, she's being a hypocrite. That is the word.
She's dilly-dallying over a very serious issue.
I mean, it's not just that, though. This isn't the main issue that everyone has issues with her on. It's Woody Allen, of course. You're saying Woody Allen is innocent. I don't think anyone was shocked that, you know, she furthermore is kind of like, you know, saying this. Because guess what? If Scarlett Johansson had her own, like, autobiography movie, kind of biopic, it would probably be titled Addicted to Bad Press, the Scarlett Johansson story. It is the worst. She is terrible. And I think she comes from such a high level privilege. Well, I feel like she also feels like she's kind of woke in some way where she's like, I am an actor and I am not going to allow people's opinions to form my own, instead of being realistic in life and understanding that just because you were the highest woman paid actress out of in Hollywood right now,
it is empowering her to say, like, I'm gonna speak the truth and whatever my truth is.
That's not empowering. That's ignorant. Yeah. That is quite ignorant, because that, if you want to say that, then you can say that about Donald Trump. And everything that she has said has never been to help narratives. It has to be. It's been basically, it seems like, oh, you know, everyone is on this thing. I'm gonna be the opposite cool person and go on the opposite route for the fun and games of it.
After this whole Dylan Farrow thing came out, which was a really big deal, a lot of the actors that have worked with him, and just in general, Greta Gerwig, Timothée Chalamet, they distanced themselves from Woody Allen.
Because they're smart.
And other people continue to. But, you know, Woody Allen has directed Scarlett Johansson in a ton of movies, Matchpoint, Scoop, Vicky Cristina Barcelona. And she said, and this is the specific thing she said, I love Woody. I believe him. I would work with him anytime. And I see Woody whenever I can, and I have had a lot of conversations with him about it. I have been very direct with him, and he's very direct with me. He maintains his innocence, and I believe him. And then also Alec Baldwin in 2018 said it was unfair and sad that stars are not wanting to work with him anymore, or people trying to distance themselves from him. Anyway, this is bringing up whole bigger conversations, like, can you actually support the Me Too movement, the Time's Up movement, and support someone like Woody Allen? We're going there right after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, we're talking about actress Scarlett Johansson, who was recently put on blast with this interview in The Hollywood Reporter, where she basically said that she believed that Woody Allen was innocent of the sexual abuse accusations that were brought up against him by his adoptive daughter, Dylan Farrow, and she'd work with him anytime, and it's not something that a lot of people are a big fan of, because she seems to speak out about things that don't seem to make sense, whether it be it's how she wants to play LGBTQ+ characters or even this.
You remember the statement where she related playing trans characters to playing a tree?
That's arts.
Yeah, you know, that's what something she said. So there's context to the reason why she gets so much backlash, because she says these things and doesn't expect, you know, and this is a lot
she
of people that
repercussions.
Yeah, this is a lot of people that I feel like I know, like, they say things and they don't expect any kind of backlash on it, and they just feel like, especially, you know, if we're talking about the Kevin Harts and things like that, where they feel like, oh, I'm good, I'm making money, I'm making this large amount of money, and I don't have to worry about it because I'm going to continue to get jobs and I'm until you get people that want me to be involved in their projects. But saying these things and saying that you are okay with being, you know, and working and being friends with, you know, a quote unquote alleged, like, you know, child abuse, like, you know, kind of
predator.
Yeah, predator is just disgusting to me. Like, how do you move forward in that in your career? How do you continue to stay the highest paid actress in Hollywood? That just kind of shows you, and not even kind of, it does show you the holes in this whole entire wave of Hollywood, where they're saying we want to be inclusive and diverse and really, you know, hold people accountable, but you're not doing that.
Well, I think there's two sides to this, and what I see is people saying stuff like that, getting dragged, getting canceled, and then having to come back and be like, I apologize, I didn't mean that, I wasn't taking everything into account. But I do think there's a new trend happening, a new wave, with the Scarlett Johansons, with the Kevin Harts, with the Dave Chappelles, and I keep bringing it up, where they're taking such a strong stance and they're not moving from it. And because of they're not moving from it, it kind of gets washed over, and it's kind of like, okay, well, I guess that's their point of view and moving on.
But I think maybe. It's, I think it's not getting washed over in the communities that they're saying it about. I think it's getting washed over in the communities that people are. That doesn't affect me. That doesn't offend me because I'm not a part of those communities. And I've been kind of thinking about this bigger picture conversation about cancel culture. And I've really kind of sat back and thought about it. And I think I don't necessarily know if I believe in cancel culture anymore. I don't really believe it's a legitimate thing because I feel like cancel culture is saying that, you can't hold people, you shouldn't hold people accountable for things that they've said. Like, cancel culture has been looked at as like, oh, can people ever change? Can people ever move forward after something they've said in the past? And it feels like you're trying to give them like, oh, well, they're sorry. Can't we just forgive them? But sometimes, and I've said this often, you make your bed, you have to lay in it. And that is what, a lot of times consequences come with that. And so I don't know if I necessarily believe in this whole idea of of climate change. I mean, not climate change, but cancel culture.
That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, cancel culture anymore,
Well, it's interesting to me because this is someone, Scarlett Johansson is part of the Me Too movement, Time's Up movement. She has called out someone like James Franco in 2018 for wearing the Time's Up pin because, of course, he had sexual abuse allegations too. So I think it brings up also a conversation with, like, when you're a woman and you are close friends with someone who has been called out, and yet you're, like, kind of stuck in that in between where you obviously believe victims in certain ways. Like, I don't get from Scarlett Johansson's perspective, why would she be mad at someone like James Franco, but not like angry at someone like Woody Allen? Is it because she actually knows the people that, James Franco has hurt? Is it because she's been there in front of moment or, with James Franco in moments where he's done inappropriate things and she hasn't seen that herself? Is she not, obviously she's not believing victims, but it's like, for her, is it because she needs to see it and experience it to believe it?
If I'm being quite frank and honest, I think this is just another case of a cis-hetero white woman being a cis-hetero white woman. They can pick and choose what they want to be a part of because a lot of times these conversations don't affect them. And obviously, and even if you think about it overlying into the conversation, even when it is about the Me Too movement, people credited Alyssa Milano because she's a white woman for starting it when it was Tarana Burke. And so it's one of those things where I think white women in this culture, yes, everyone is kind of in this layer of it's like cis-hetero white men and it's white women and it's all people of color kind of underlying then in their intersectionalities. But either way, Scarlett Johansson is a very privileged woman, and she clearly, no one is going to stop her from getting jobs. No one is going to, people are going to still see her movies. People that are affected in the communities that she's, talking about, they're going to be like, oh, it's not me. So I like her. I think she's a great, Black Widow. I'm going to go see that Marvel movie. But
they think she's hot in a tight suit.
It's not okay. It's honestly not okay for this to move forward and for her to be confident in those words.
That is interesting part.
That's alarming.
So, I think the moral of the story is that white cis hetero women need to step up.
Period.
Okay, there you go. That was our Let's Go There topic of the day. Coming up, we've got what's trending in the news top of the hour. We're talking about Facebook dating and everything you need to know.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
We are back, and as a reminder, National Suicide Prevention Week is coming up next week. And to start it all, actually, Channel Q, this Sunday, September 8th, we're going to be having a whole conversation to help end the stigma of talking about mental health. This is going to be an in-depth show, program, conversation on mental health and suicide prevention. And we've got some amazing artists and stars joining us for this one. Blink-182, Halsey, Lizzo, Shawn Mendes, Tegan and Sarah, and even our own from Loveline, Dr. Chris Donahue. And you can actually be featured on the show, your story. Just share your story on the site imlistening.org to be featured on the show. It's going to be really cool, and it's also really important. We like to create a safe space here at Channel Q, and of course our show Let's Go There every single day, but specifically for National Suicide Prevention Week, let's really focus on that so we can end the stigma for good.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure we'll do some great stories and have some amazing experts on that week to, talk about this and also, encourage the conversation.
Yeah, so again, I'm listening. That's this Sunday at 7 a.m. right here on Channel Q. Now let's get into what's trending in the news right now, top of the hour. Okay, Facebook is getting into the love game with a new matchmaking service, dating. Facebook Facebook Dating. It's finally launching in the U.S. today, which I feel like Facebook's already used for dating, basically, or like Tinder. A lot of programs go through Facebook, but they're trying to like own that now.
I feel like Facebook for dating is literally like signing up for Match.com. So
it is for maybe like the older generation.
Yeah, it's most definitely not meant for millennials and Gen Zers. It's meant for my mom and the other baby boomers.
Good. She needs a date. Did you say she needed a date?
Yeah, but do I want her to find one on Facebook dating? Maybe not.
You know what? Action is action. But Instagram, it'll be interesting to see if Instagram dating starts, because that would be crazy.
That's not going to happen. That can't happen now.
The U.S. is now the 20th country to have access to dating on Facebook. The feature allows anyone with a Facebook account who is 18 or older to set up a dating profile from within the Facebook mobile app. And while they get into this whole dating space, it might seem a bit ironic because for more than a year, the social media company has come under fire for its data privacy practices. So it's like, do you really want to date on Facebook when they, you know, they're basically selling off your data? And of course, we remember the Cambridge Analytics scandal. Now Facebook is asking all of us to trust it with one of the most intimate activities that we all do online, dating and our search for love and other things.
It's funny, Facebook asking us to trust it. It's like they're the boyfriend that cheats on you multiple times, but it's like, oh, I'll change, yeah. I promise.
Data.
I'll be different.
Yeah. So dating pulls over a first name and age from a Facebook account. But beyond that, the company says that the two profiles are largely separate. Okay. There are a lot of options to integrate more closely with Facebook or Instagram. For example, according to Facebook, individuals can opt in to share photos posted on Facebook or Instagram to their dating profile or add Instagram followers to dating's secret crush feature, which allows for indicating crushes among Facebook friends.
Do you remember that poke button? Like when you could poke people? That was like modern, like, you know, stalking. Like I remember when I was like using Facebook like super heavy before I stopped. Mm-hmm. There was this one guy that kept poking me, like trying to get my attention. And honestly, I felt sexually harassed.
Oh,
I did.
Could you block them from poking?
I mean, I did, but it's like, it's weird. The whole poking thing, I don't know.
And poking and it's like, when you think about the idea of poking someone, it's like abusive.
That's why I said sexually harassed. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting to, even with this like secret crush thing, I don't know. I don't know why Facebook is trying to really do all these things with like adding the television shows and all this stuff. It's just like, just be Facebook. Be what you're supposed to be, and that's it.
Yeah, trying to own the world, and this is what happens. Now let's move on to corporations doing some good. Walgreens, CVS, and the supermarket chain Wegmans Food Markets said today they're going to start asking customers to not openly carry firearms in their stores. They join Walmart and Kroger in a change of gun policy following several deadly mass shootings in the U.S. And the retailers are among a growing number of U.S. companies, also such as Delta Airlines and Bank of America, that are responding to calls for action to help decrease this gun violence that is really plaguing this country, and they don't care about the backlash they're going to get from these gun owners groups or the NRA or politicians, because obviously they're thinking about the bigger picture here. So it's interesting that we're now relying on the corporations because our government isn't stepping up. But hey, I'm happy at least someone is doing something right now. It's a step forward. That was what's trending in the news top of the hour right here on Let's Go There. After this, we're talking about how to rekindle a friendship. And our question of the day, should you revive a dead friendship? Do people deserve second chances? You can let us know what you think right now. Give us a call, 833-77-CALL-Q. That's 833-772-2557.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Is it worth reviving a dead friendship? If a friendship is over, should you just leave it at that? It's our question of the day. We already have a lot of people responding on social media. And I guess Ryan, dealt with that where you've had a friendship that was a great friendship. It, you know, it somewhat expired, and do you just like let it go? Are you the type to cut it off, or do you try to make it work?
So that actually happened with my friends that I actually grew up with. So we knew each other when we were 5, and we met at summer camp. We went to school together all the way up to high school, into college. And when we got to college, we just went into separate friend groups. And also, it was that kind of self-discovery kind of era of your life. And I think once you started kind of figuring out who we were beyond our relationship, I think that was a moment where you could tell the friendship was kind of just dying in some ways. Yeah. And there was times where you would want to be like, oh, let's hang out, let's do this. But it just feels like you're on the same page. You start believing different things. You start shaping your mind differently than what you thought. And sometimes people are in your life, in my opinion, for chapters, and you shouldn't have to, you shouldn't force it. And especially if, you know, it's done and you feel like it's done.
Yeah, including, I mean, there's two sides to it. There could be a friendship, like someone did something really horrible, and yeah. there was a trust that was broken or loyalty that was broken, and it's hard to return to where it was. And then I've had situations where life happens as you get older, like we all just get busy, and I have people I'll see once a year and it's still the same, like we
think, same.
And that's awesome.
That's like true friendship.
But I love that. But then there's sometimes friends that they take it really personally that you haven't gotten together or things, and like they'll look at it as, well, you're not really my friend anymore. Even though it's a different type of friendship.
Do you feel like that there's some actual there's a valid point in that? Because in busyness, yes, everyone, especially as adults, I think there's that conversation that you have when you reach adulthood, like, okay, everyone has their own life. And everything, everyone has their own things they're going through. But if you do, you know, value the friendship or the relationship, you are going to take that extra step to check in. And it's kind of like,
well, checking in is one thing.
Were you being a crappy friend?
Yeah, well, then checking in is one thing. I think it's just face to face is important. I just think life happens and we need to be kinder to ourselves and kinder to each other to be like, I'm not going to take this personally. You're going through your thing. I mean, I've been through that. And I feel like I maintained so many friendships over the years and they change. We have to be okay with the friendships we had evolving and then categorizing. We have different friends for different things.
I mean, it's true. But here's the thing. I'm also really good at cutting people off. I'd be like, over it. Like, once I know it's done, I'm not going to force it. And you're out. You're done. Wiping my hands up.
Wow. All right, I want to get on your bad side.
It's not even the bad side.
No, on your non-side, nothing side.
Yeah.
Well, after this, I want to talk about this anthropologist that actually talks about the amount of friends you actually can have at once. There's a whole scientific method to it that's coming up after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
So should you revive a dead friendship? Ryan thinks that you shouldn't. Just cut them off. I'm like, why not? Give it a shot. It doesn't hurt. And we want to hear from you. 833-77-CALL-Q is our number. 833-772-2557. And we got a bunch of responses on social media. I know we are Channel Q.
Yeah, so Jen says, I think it's chances as much as it's chapters and seasons. Mm. You can go in and out of season with people. You'll never be the friends you were because you're different people now. You can always meet up again later on down the trial of a life.
Ooh, deep.
You know, actually, remember when we had Gabby and Allison on?
Yeah.
Is that's the names? Okay, yeah. We have so many guests.
Allison Raskin and Gabby Dunn.
Yes. Well, they actually had a conversation because they have written a couple books together.
And they have their podcast and their YouTube channel together.
They're working constantly together. And there was something that they said where they were like, you know, we had to decide, like, you know, sometimes we're friends and sometimes we're not friends. Sometimes we're just business partners. And it's like, you have to be comfortable with, like, where you're, like, how friendship just changes.
And I just think it goes back to not just friendship, like, stop being so inside the box of what you think everything should be. I think it creates more stress and pressure than joy and fun and happiness. Like,
I don't want that to be the all-around narrative, because I think that it is important to set boundaries. And when you are done with something and it's comfortable for you, and that is fine with you, and you're happy with your decision, that you should be, you know, confident in that. You can move forward. You don't have to be like, I don't have to be, you know, because some people are okay with structure. Some people like it. Some people don't need to be all like, you know, willy-nilly. They want to just, you know, say, hey, this is what I want. This is what I think I need personally for my own mental health. And this is why I feel like our friendship is done.
Well, yeah. If someone doesn't make you feel good, when you leave that experience feeling worse than when you started, probably that person shouldn't be in your life.
Yeah.
You know, surround yourself by people, whether it be friends, colleagues, etc. You can't control the colleague situation, but just be aware of what makes you feel good and feel bad. And actually, there's this evolutionary anthropologist, Robin Dunbar, who says that there's this consistent pattern and of how many friends you could actually have in your circle at once before it gets like too much to manage. And so according to this person, you can have 5 intimates. So that's someone, I guess, like people day to day that you see, 5 intimates, 15 good friends, 50 close friends and 150 friends.
I don't know where you found that article, but it's lies. 50. Imagine having that many friends. I was at a concert
last Friday. But that goes back to your Instagram, or I don't know.
Instagram
like,
is not my friends. People on my Instagram are not my friends.
Well, or it's people that you follow on Instagram.
And that's no shade.
But the people
even the people that I follow, I would not consider friends. They are just, you know, people that either I am like acquaintances. Most of them are acquaintances. Like if I'm following like actual friends that I text and I have their numbers, those are friends. And right, that is not many people.
And that
at
could
all.
Be probably 15 people.
Lies. I would say that could be about 5 people.
Five intimates, 15 good friends. So I don't know. According also to this poll that was...
imagine having 15 good friends and them all being in one place. The organization.
That doesn't mean it's all
no, but
place.
I'm just saying, imagine that.
Well, according to this poll, it found on average Americans have 9 close friends. Not including their relatives. This includes 45% of Americans who say they have 6 or more close friends. 39% have between 3 to 5 close friends. 14% have 1 or 2. So listen, we're all in the same range, but it just shows. Like, I don't think it's just about what's easy to have, but it's like, I think it is about what we can just keep up with. It's hard to keep up with anything these days, including ourselves, let alone maintain friendships, which is why people cycle in and out. And at different points, you might be closer with certain people as others, because I actually think we can't physically, mentally take on more people in our life than that. It's hard to tackle. It doesn't even make sense. Now, according to this site, thecut.com, they have great stories. They had a whole thing about how to revive a dead friendship. So here's what they had to say, just in case you want to give them a shot, Ryan. They said, think long and hard before you start things up again. Pretend you're getting to know them for the first time. So it's like, don't assume that the same level of intimacy you once had is there.
Like, it sounds like the person that you know, y'all both know each other, but you reintroduce yourselves. Like, hi.
Yeah, and give us that person
time. Nice to meet you.
Give that person time to process it, and don't take it personally. And there you have it. That was some insight on friendship and more. From Shira and Ryan on Let's Go There. Coming up, our Yas Queen of the Day. Don't go anywhere.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Well, it's time for our Yas Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
And guess what? It's Freddie Mercury's birthday. The day
so
of
why
Freddie
did we
Mercury's
make Beyonce's birthday.
Birthday
Yes Queen yesterday, since we're doing it for Freddie.
Well, she's
Freddie
still
Mercury.
Here, and we talk about her all the time.
No, we don't talk about Beyonce's birthday all the time.
No. I don't know. Well, you should have gotten on top of that.
I should have.
And in honor of Freddie Mercury's birthday, these filmmakers Esteban Bravo and Beth David, they did a really interesting project where they reimagined the song Love Me Like There's No Tomorrow and made this animated short that tells this queer inclusive love story. And it would have been, by the way, his 73rd birthday today. Anyway, so in this short film, which you should definitely check out, and it's everywhere, like online. If you go to HuffPost.com, you can check it out too. We are ChannelQ.com should be posting it as well. Anyway, so it depicts, is it up there? We are ChannelQ.com. Don't go anywhere else. So in this video, it depicts this relationship between two white blood cells who are illustrated as gay men. And after a while, it's revealed that one of them is HIV positive and how, like, they're saddened by that reality, but they appear then as older versions of themselves beneath a disco ball, implying that they actually have a happily ever after, and that's achieved. And it really reflects this short, different aspects of Mercury's legacy and his life and what he lived. He, of course, was open. He was gay, bisexual, and died of an AIDS-related illness in November 1991, just one day after publicly confirming he was HIV positive. So a great way to honor him and his legacy on his birthday. Freddie Mercury, you get our Yas Queen of the Day.
Yas Queen!
And these cool filmmakers. So that's an interesting one that's out there today. And that does it for today's show. And again, and a happy belated birthday, Beyonce. That does it for today's show. Tomorrow on the show, we are back. We're going to be talking about the gender marker X that is being, you know, brought into different states and what it's actually like that once you make that change on your birth certificate and driver's license. Plus, we're going to be asking all of you about something that might be a bit, you know, controversial. There might be some different opinions about this. Once you reach a certain age, should you be forced to stop driving? We want to know. We get into these conversations. That's tomorrow on Let's Go There with Sharon Ryan on Channel Q, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Again, this show is available as a podcast as well as all of our other shows on our site. We are channelq.com. We are sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
See you tomorrow and stay tuned for Love Line with Dr. Chris.
Bye, guys. Hey.